You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahia hi mari e tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toka ingoa.
Ko Sophia toku ingoa, nau mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. How are you today, Mea?
I am good. Maybe a controversial opinion, but I'm loving the colder weather.
Okay. Actually, you know what? I'm kind of here for it as well. I'm back at uni, and being at uni when it's like nice weather actually sucks.
Yeah, so it kind of makes it better for locking in.
Yeah, I'm fine to be in the library and cozy. Yeah,
I'm bringing back my scarves, and I'm very excited about it.
The scarves are back.
The scarves are so back.
Oh, awesome. What have we got on the show today, Maya?
Yeah, I caught up with two of the artists showing work within Room's new group exhibition, Get Ready With Me, Aria McKinnon and Rita Takuchi. So what have you got today?
I caught up with artist Marie Shannon about her current solo exhibition at Trish Clark Gallery, Life Stories.
Here, aha, ofakara, we'd love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tukupatahi mai, you can text us on 5395-5395, or why mai rane, give us a call in the studio on 309-3879.
Also, after the show, koa e ware ware e ahana koutou, te whakarongo ki e nei kōrero anō, hei pakihere roki roki marongi, te pai tuku tuku o irirangi poho, me haere ke 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
Oh, that's a good art.
GRWM Get Ready With Me is a new group exhibition showing at Room Gallery. The show brings together the practices of Aria McKinnis, Kiani Refa, and Rita Takuchi into an exploration of the performed self. The title of the show, Get Ready With Me, refers to the viral online video genre, Get Ready With Me, a trend in which the personal everyday rituals of individuals are performed and shared into a public platform and audience. Each of the artists reflects on these notions through their respective practices, analyzing the contemporary online behavior that surrounds them and its effects on everyday rituals and the navigation of the everyday life. Aria McKinnis is a Tamaki-based artist and retailer who examines how sincerity is staged across personal and private life within consumer culture through a practice of sculptural installation. Within Get Ready With Me, McKinnis displays an installation of an at-home gym, producing a mixture of found and fabricated campy gym equipment that shifts the gallery space into a set-like stage of self-improvement. Rita Takuchi is a Tamaki-based artist who produces beautiful oil paintings that seek to delve into the exploration of the diaristic everyday, reframing the typically overlooked mundane and pulling it into a place of meditative reflection to be remembered. I caught up with Aria and Rita, two of the artists showing work within Get Ready With Me, yeah, about the show and their overall practices.
My name is Aria McKinnis, and I am a installation sculptural, kind of all sorts artist, definitely, yeah, sculptural installation. Sometimes video work, love videos. I studied my undergrad at Massey University a wee while ago now, and I met Kiani and Rita more recently when we all studied our masters at AUT together. We all finished last July, which is very exciting. So this has been all of our first shows directly off the masters, which is quite exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. And Rita, do you want to introduce yourself?
Kia ora, I'm Rita. I'm mainly a painter, but I do some like wood carving and like sound installation. I finished masters last year, and I guess my practice is kind of grounded in the everyday, the mundane, and like a softening of like the rigid, habitual rigidity within the everyday through painting and installation.
Beautiful. And you two plus Kiani Refa currently have a group exhibition on at Room titled GRWM, which draws from the online video genre Get Ready With Me, a viral video which offers this personal insight into people's everyday lives and routines, and into this public viewing sphere. I wanted to start this conversation by speaking to the premise of the show, as well as how this collaboration came about between you guys. Yeah, so how did the three of you meet and come to making a show together? And what drew you guys to this collective investigation of Get Ready With Me as a premise for building a show together?
Well, like the first idea was, I remember me and Aria were in the studio, like deep into the exegesis, and I think I was kind of having an internal conflict, I guess, about if my paintings are like what it means to be curating your paintings, and if performing is inherently like inauthentic.
Mm.
And yeah, we were just talking about it and having a dialogue, and Aria was just like, why don't we just like lean into the performance?
Yeah, I think my work looks quite heavily at this kind of ongoing, I mean, I call it sales theatre, like an embodied kind of dramaturgy that understands the kind of body as a performance vehicle for corporate gain. Yeah, really heavy-hitting stuff. But performance is really, it's a huge part of my practice and kind of, and of my everyday life. So I kind of mention it, I think, in my bio. I'm also a retailer. I'm a really serious saleswoman.
Oh, very nice.
And so it kind of plays with that a little bit. But yeah, we were sitting down at lunch. Kiani was like sick as a dog, like absolutely sick as a dog, could not be at school. And yeah, we were both kind of just saying there's not, I mean, I'm a huge fan of both Rita and Kiani's practices, and we were kind of like, oh, we don't know if we see these kind of overlaps. And I think at the time, Rita was doing this beautiful painting of a bag, and yeah, the bag was kind of propped up on a sink, and it was large scale painting. And I was like, oh my God, I think we were just kind of gasbagging. We'd been like, I'm not on TikTok, but we'd been kind of laughing about, kind of TikTok trends. And I was like, yeah, what's in her bag? And then I was like, oh my God, there's something in that. I really love, as I was saying, kind of performance. And I think for me, it just like kind of goes straight to aerobicize, and these kind of cycles of like betterments and these kind of trends of physical kind of change and shift. And I thought it would be quite fun for the two of us. Initially, it was just the two of us to work together on a show. And then we were like, hang on, let's phone a friend. And we called Kiani in. Kiani does these fantastic, they can be quite staged and quite theatrical and quite cinematic. These beautiful paintings, usually in kind of monochromes. And we thought that would be an excellent addition to the show. So we kind of like hunkered down, finished the exegesis. And then after that, we were all like, okay, now's the time. Wow. And we, kind of threw the proposal together.
Yeah. And how did it feel kind of bringing this quite viral media performative thing and bringing it like into an art context? Mm-hmm. Like what about that kind of pairing was like interesting, and how does that kind of shift you?
Yeah. I mean, I think we see these kind of viral moments, and I think we see trends and cycles in art all the time. But I think, kind of shifting focus and really like honing in on, kind of current and contemporary, or the slipperiness of how do I even say this? Like the slipperiness of kind of exhibiting yourself in an everyday context, especially. And I think the kind of crux of this really was down to production methods. If we even think about like the production of content and creation of, I mean, content creators. And so as an artist, we use all different kind of forms of production or content creation, manufacturing. And so I think, shifting that kind of quite heavily produced format into something that's actually quite long form, like painting. I mean, I'm not a painter, but I know it takes you guys ages. Or for me, I was thinking about this just before when I was on my way over, like these kind of, a lot of my work I have to get fabricated. I usually go quite, I'm really ambitious. And I kind of go, like I've got this idea in my head and I want it to be like a blockbuster movie, but I am like not only the only actress, I'm also like the director, the cinematographer, the CEO of Vibes,
yes,
the editor.
I'm
doing the whole thing. And so, yeah, I think production method and kind of that content creation circulation and then really reflecting on identity, well, not even necessarily, I think it's more performed identity is how we kind of brought that viral moment into this show. Would you agree? I'm spitballing here.
Well, I guess like the reinvention of it all, of social media trends, I think, the repackaging of the self is like really brought into the space. It's nothing I've really touched on before in my practice. So bringing it into the space with Kiani's work and Aria's work, it's I think there's a full, like, cycle that's happening within the space.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I kind of think there's also some really, like, fun moments. Like, I think, you know, Kiani went quite, like, heavy on that kind of the moment look, and so really, like, pulled through, you know. It's kind of, like, almost like a washed-out brat green, which that green, close friends green, like, really kind of looking at. And I think Kiani's hilarious to me because he just does these fantastic, really, like, quick-fire, funny kind of Instagram posts. Like, it's very, like, current, or, like, whatever's currently happening.
Yeah.
It's very, like, just, like, regurgitating, like, whatever's currently on the mind. Like,
yeah,
it's really immediate.
Like live post.
Yes,
like.
Really, yeah, that's what it's called. I'm, like, really showing my age here. but, yeah, I think Kiani's very, like, immediate and very digital. And so it's, yeah, I think between the three of us, there's kind of different ways that we really embodied these ideas of viral moments or trends or movements in different ways. Kiani's definitely got that kind of immediacy, and I think his paintings feel like that, like they kind of on the go.
Yeah.
And yours are definitely more meditative, but they're kind of, they're slightly sneaky combination of kind of production, methods of production and production in general. Yeah. And then, yeah, the kind of the ways in which we look at or adapt to contemporary life.
Yeah, I'm just now, I don't know, putting two and two together, but there's kind of a lot of similarities between, like, content creators and artists. Like, you're kind of like one woman showing
it.
Oh
my God.
You're doing, like, the behind the scenes, you're doing the thing, you've got to be your own, like, salesperson half the time. I'm just being like, yeah, there's an overlap.
I was so mortified because I hate posting on Instagram, and I was like, oh my God, I'm my own promoter. Like, this show's only going to be as good as I can make it based on how I can rally the troops. And so I, like, went deep in the archives and was posting crazy on Instagram, like, directly leading up to the show, and I was like, here's a back catalogue of every time I've ever been on an exercycle and filmed in the last, like, 5 years, you know, like, longer.
Yeah.
I think I'd used an exercycle in an artwork, God, maybe 2018 or 2019, and I was like, here's every shot of me on an exercycle ever, and I was like, boom, 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 bringing up the lead up. I was like, viral, and it felt kind of viral for a second. I was like, wow, I never posted. I was like, people love me,
and I'm like, viral.
Okay, I'm getting some likes, getting some attention.
I am the moment.
It's happening for me. It's all on.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, shifting to Rita and the work. You present this beautiful array of oil paintings within this body of work. The series of imagery of bags referencing that what's in my bag type video. However, I really love how you tease the viewer with objects out of sight, drawing them in but never fully revealing the contents of the bags, keeping the viewers in a kind of threshold of anticipation. Yeah, do you want to speak a little bit to this series of work and the thinking behind it?
I think bags were already kind of a motif throughout my work, especially in my collection of, like, master's paintings that I did. So yeah, I already had a lot of archived photos of bags in my everyday, and I think, like, that was a way of kind of inserting myself in my everyday moments. So I had that already, and so I started sketching a lot, because my process is, like, I sketch to, like, I guess record the moment first, and then I do a series of watercolors, and then I do the oil painting. So throughout the process, like, a lot of the details kind of disappear or emerge, and so they have, like, a preliminary kind of effect in the end. Putting that kind of online kind of content through my kind of ritualistic practice was really interesting, and I guess rendering it through paint allowed a different kind of look into the what's in my bag trend.
It's almost like the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Painting's such a slow, meditative process compared to that kind of quite viral, snappy, here's a snapshot, or here's a thing of all the different things.
Yeah.
So how did you find painting those things, and how it, related to, like, your connection with the what's in my bag, or your own context? Did it make you, like, kind of mull over the things?
Yeah, like, I guess drawing it over and over again, it kind of felt intrusive a little bit, like, because the objects are kind of peeking out of the bags and the paintings, but not fully revealed. And yeah, that kind of made me think about that threshold area of, like, the in-betweenness of concealing and revealing, vulnerability and performance.
The thing that's kind of interesting is, I guess, they're also really permanent.
Mm.
Like, usually these moments are really fleeting, and I think, you know, Kiani and Rita's practices and this body of work kind of both really distill a moment that's usually meant to be up for 24 hours and 24 hours alone. And I guess the kind of sculptures do that as well. They're all just, you know, I'm now stuck with them. But yeah, I think there's a kind of permanence that happens through, like, you're kind of permanently memorializing that ritual.
Yeah. exactly.
You're like,
exactly. Yes. But yeah, this the molded canvases I did was a way of kind of sitting in that in-betweenness as well, making the objects inside the bag visible and like physically there but still ungraspable, and kind of exploring this question of if my everyday moments and scenes reveal more about who I am than the objects in the bag. So kind of playing with how, yeah, identity is and the self is presented in the everyday and in the genre of what's in my bag, I guess, yeah.
Mm, yeah, my next question was going to be about that other series and those embedded forms, which you can't quite tell if maybe they're the actual object or something, but you can kind of, as you walk through the gallery space, kind of connect those dots. But they've got a real shift in the actual subject, like the imagery themselves. They're often of like landscapes and moments. Yeah, do you want to speak about that pairing of that actual imagery within the painting and then that embedded nature that you've been put in there?
Well, I did the bag paintings first, and it was like the mandarin kind of peeking out, the car keys peeking out. But yeah, I really, like, if I was a viewer, I'd be like, what's in the bag? What's in the bag? I really want to know. So I wanted to focus on the objects, but not fully, because there is that in-betweenness that the what's in my bag sits in. Kind of, I wanted to explore how these bags are kind of vessels for everyday identity, so, and they are with you throughout the day. So that's where the everyday scenes come from, and that's where my usual practice sits, like the everyday moments. So yeah, it was a perfect kind of combination of my usual practice and the meditations on the everyday and the social media trend aspect of the work, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. And now shifting over to you, Aria. In this exhibition, you present an installation of an at-home gym, shifting the gallery space into this actual home gym with various gym equipment, sculptures that you kind of, they lean into this kind of campy-esque quality, which I really love, through the harnessing of these objects such as chalices, as knee pads for ab circle pro, and recast dinner plates as barbells. Yeah. Do you want to speak a little bit to this body of work that you've shown?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I love performance. I love theatre, and I'm not very good at it. And so I was kind of doing these sculptures and installations. It's a really easy way for me to kind of put something on the stage without being the focus. But
yeah, it is very set-like.
Yeah, yeah. And I love film and TV. And so much of what I kind of draw from is often, you know, reality television. I love the confessionals when you're getting these kind of like supposedly unfiltered but highly produced moments of someone kind of coming clean about something.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned before, I work in retail, and so I really like blurring those retail logics. All of that black and steel was kind of made and fabricated with Stephen Brookbanks. It's amazing. So grateful for his support, because I just cannot make half of that stuff by myself, which is also a huge part of it. But that was all kind of designed to look like the shop that I manage. And so it's that black and steel, and it's quite sexy. It's kind of industrial. And I loved the Ab Circle Pro. I'd been thinking about, I love cycles, circular spins, motions, and the kind of idea of an object of desire being shown from all angles, and also that kind of cyclical moment and consumption, consumerism.
Yeah.
The Ab Circle Pro is kind of maybe not quite, and this is the thing I think with my practice in general, is, as I was saying before, I have to get a lot of it fabricated because I just don't have the physical skill myself, and there's always bumps along the way, and usually they're budget. was. Mm. And so that's when, you know, I was like, okay, I have to quickly make these kind of patch jobs. And so we'd gotten halfway through the Ab Circle Pro and it was kind of meant to look like a dinner plate. And I was going to cast these aluminium, I've done lots of aluminium casting before, these aluminium chalices from that I trade made them. But yeah, I was like, I'm going to get these knee pads made. And then I got some quotes done and I was like, oh my God, I am not getting those knee pads made. So I was like, all right, Stu, we're just going to whack the chalices on and we'll just chop them off and see what happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the same with the barbell rack. And I had these big dreams of getting these. I'd collected all of these silver platters and I really wanted them to be some aluminium. And then that didn't work. And then I ended up kind of being introduced to these people that make kind of food, fake food and props for film and TV and museums and malls, which
nice.
Is the dream job.
Yes.
And they suggested that they would make me some casts because I was going to make some casts myself. And it was, I ended up with a short timeline and all of the classic making things. And so I ended up kind of casting them out of plaster and kind of haphazardly throwing them together. And so I think that's the story of a lot of my making, is these big dreams. And these kind of failed ideas, and so these failures are really kind of crucial to the work. I think the gym equipment and these kind of rituals can often only last so long. I think failure is really inherent in, unless you're insanely disciplined, which I don't think that many of us are. There's an end in sight to all of these trends. There's an end in sight to the availability or the potency of influences. Like, they, you know, it comes back around so quickly and there's always an end inside. And I think my kind of installation of sculptures sit right in that kind of end moment where it's right before something fails.
Also wanted to delve a bit more into the collaboration aspect of it. I know you guys went to uni together, but in this year out of uni, how much like cross-pollination was occurring leading up to the show?
It was just Zooms and like DMs, which is like,
that's quite funny.
Yeah, exactly.
That's quite on point.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah, but also when we came into the space together, we found like really funny connections. Like Aria did the fish plates, and I had a painting of fishes, and it was like the same like breed of fish almost. Like,
wow, funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also I did a painting of like the iPhone molded into the canvas with kind of meadow landscape, and Kiani had a painting of hay fever medication, so it was just like comedic stuff happened.
But yeah, there were lots of nice, I think, connections that happened once we were in the space. But it was funny because we were all kind of remote. Like, Kiani had moved back up home to Whangarei and had done a lot of his paintings in his parents' garage up there, and Rita and me are so far apart because she's on the shore. But, you know, it's summer that we were kind of producing this, and so you get busy with friends and family. So it was mostly remote. And then it was really easy to kind of pull the overall hang together, because by the time we had all the work in, we were like, oh, there's so many connections. Mm. And so, yeah, I think quite often with practices like ours that look quite disparate, I think there are kind of easy connections. If you've got the time to spend kind of connecting the dots, and if you've got that kind of love for making connections.
Yeah, lovely. And bringing it out to a slightly wider position, lastly, I wanted to ask what your hopes are for audiences engaging with this exhibition.
I guess if they could analyse kind of how these online behaviours are reflected in the everyday encounter, I think just starting a dialogue will be really fun, because we have all these questions, but our work doesn't really answer them at all. It's just, you know, a discussion, I guess.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a lot at the opening, because especially, you know, when you've got a show that's kind of a mixture of practice and kind of types of work as well, I think it can be quite daunting. And I was really concerned with, you know, some of my co-workers that came, or my boyfriend's parents came up. And I think the big kind of takeaway that I really wanted was there are moments, I think, in the show that are quite serious, and then there are moments that aren't. And I think it's that real reminder that it's so fleeting, and it doesn't need to be. It's just not that deep. And it's a bit silly. Everything's a bit silly. And especially now that everyone's so digital, there's a real tendency to be super, super serious and to really, you know, think about you and your impact. And I think the show is kind of, it does that in a sense, but it's also, it's kind of lighthearted. It's kind of, I mean, I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Either it could be a moment of reflection, it could be a moment of humour, it could be a moment of recognising or acknowledging. But as long as, yeah, people come and have a nice time and enjoy.
Like, the serious part I was thinking about is, I think everyone's trying to grasp at vulnerability and authenticity and in whatever form, even if it's fake. Like, I want people to, like, reflect on that, what's actually real, and if your presentation of yourself is actually real.
Yeah, and probably, like, labour. But, yeah, like, how much goes into all of these moments and how lasting they might actually be and what that kind of greater impact is.
That was Aria McInnes and Rita Takeuchi speaking to me about their group show on at Room Get Ready With Me, which also includes work by Kiani Rifa. The show is on until the 11th of April, so be sure to go check that one out.
Various artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
We've now got a track for you by Big Thief. This is Los Angeles. Keep it on the beat. You're listening to Various Artists.
See, I'm headed home. For my next move, I activate my Blue Eyes White Dragon.
You'd think that would scare me, but I'm taking off my mask and pulling out my face card.
Wait, is it my turn? I don't know the rules of this game, but I have a B card.
Ah, we're doomed.
The most powerful card in the deck, the B card, provides you with the ultimate power, the ability to win tickets, albums, and more. Get a B card today from 95BFM.com for just $4.20 a month.
Guys, he finally asked me out. He says he knows a spot.
It better not be ice cream at Mission Bay.
I hope it's not under the harbour bridge.
Oh no, what if you have to walk up Mount Eden?
He better not think Minnehaha is original.
Oh, thank God, it's a beer spot. I can try the new local brews.
The 95BFM Drive Show. A 3-hour psychedelic playground of japes, jive and jams. 4 to 7pm every weekday, only on 95BFM.
Thanks to the beer spot, your tappy place.
Okay, Meadow, we can't lose again, or it's off to the factory. Go, Meadow, go! No, other way! Don't you want to live?
Gonna get there, good horse! Headway wins the Spring Cup!
Oh no, Meadow. I won't let them take you, Meadow. We'll find a way. I just saw a documentary about a basketball-playing Labrador. Maybe you can learn an unconventional sport too.
Pony Ping Pong with Matt and Aaron, bringing as much entertainment to your Friday night as a Shetland pony skee-balling the table edge. With a mix of mashdowns, candid conversation, cheap shots, and mystery celebrity nakedness. Pony Ping Pong, Friday, 9 till 11pm, only on 95BFM.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
Marie Shannon is a Tamaki-based artist whose practice primarily explores the quotidian and profound details of her intimate domestic surroundings. Predominantly working in photography but also video and drawing, Shannon delicately captures her subjects on a large format camera, representing them at their finest through these beautiful vintage silver gelatin and large digital photographs. Narratives and objects of previous homes, love notes and faxes from her late husband Julian Dashbur, and sketches by her son Leo alike, her memoiristic practice embraces both the mundane and the personal, inviting the viewer intimately into her world. Her current solo exhibition at Trish Clark Gallery, Life Stories, brings together a curated selection and mini survey of her practice, stretching back to works from the 80s as well as others from more recent years. Presenting photographs and a body of moving image works, the show brings together over 40 years of Shannon's work, life and practice, many of which were included in her survey exhibition Rooms Found Only in the Home, developed by Dunedin Public Art Gallery in 2018, which went on to tour Christchurch, Wellington and Auckland as well. I had a kōrero with Marie Shannon about life stories and her overall practice.
I'm Marie Shannon and I started out in photography and I still think of myself as based in photography. I suppose that's where I start thinking, but I've moved more towards video, which started with photographs that included text, and then I slowly kind of moved that into video, often with text on screen or voiceover, sometimes both.
Your current solo exhibition at Trish Clark, Life Stories, brings together over 40 years of your work, life and practice, many of which were included in your touring survey exhibition, Rooms Found Only in the Home. In putting the show together, were there any particular reflections or observations that stood out to you in placing these works alongside each other again and contemplating your practice as a whole over the years through that process?
So Trish made the selection and then I had some discussion with her about content as well. She'd make suggestions, I'd make suggestions, but a lot of it was her curation, and curating is something she's very good at and she really enjoys doing that. But what I learned from Rooms Found Only in the Home that you can see in this show as well is there's always been quite a strong thread. So even if works from different series or different periods of my practice might not seem to relate, when you put them in groups, and as the work is at Trish's, it's in small groups and arrangements, but there's quite a strong thread that kind of loops through the whole thing. So in some ways I kind of I know that now. And at first I was a bit taken aback. I thought, why doesn't my work have such have kind of distinct periods where I no longer do anything that relates to that? And it's just the way I work. I've just probably just kept pulling at these particular threads or picking these particular threads up. And sometimes what happens kind of as a side to that is, and it probably happens with a lot of artists and you recognise it over time, is that some ideas don't work for a long time. You might have an idea at some stage in your practice and you just have to put it aside. You might make some notes, you might make a beginning, you might, you know, do some initial work, take some initial photographs, sketches, whatever, and the work just isn't realised, and somehow the idea and the what you make it into just doesn't mesh in some way. And what I've found is I've sometimes picked up old ideas and actually seen a way to make them or worked with them again in a way where, with the way I'm working at that later time, I can resolve it much more easily. So sometimes it's quite good not to rush something through. Sometimes you put it in a folder for 20 years and surprise yourself later.
Yeah, I guess with that, I think because your work feels, maybe autobiographical is the wrong word, but it's so personal and there's...
Yeah, there's an aspect of memoir in it.
Yeah. It's going to have those recurring threads because it's themes in your own life and your personal life that you're returning to again and again and again. I guess with that, I said before, life and practice is seen in the show, I guess because I think they feel so intertwined. You can immediately feel the intimacy of the work stepping into the show. These photographs of your son Leo's sketches as a kid, of objects that make the home, faxes from your late husband Julian Dashbaugh, like an invitation into your world. In terms of your subject matter, how do you kind of see that relationship between your practice and personal life?
I've always basically worked from the home. I've worked from the interior, and I've worked with material that's been close to me. And I guess that was just where I saw some sort of potential. And I've said this before, but when I was at art school, I started off in the late 1970s, the prevailing style was documentary photography, and you had to find a project and you had to find something. And it was very externally facing, and it was very kind of probably issues based, or you found something to, you know, make a photographic study of or a series of. But as a 19-year-old from the suburbs, I didn't have access to anything very special or unusual, or I didn't have the confidence to place myself into a new environment and feel like I had something to say about it. So in some ways that sounds very insular and unadventurous, and it was, but I also didn't have any big subjects in me. So I kind of started out small, which kind of led to a noticing of the little things around you and the way sometimes those things come together to create something that's worth showing, I guess. And in some ways that's similar to the decisive moment where, you know, typically you might be a street photographer and you're looking and everything's busy and suddenly you see these elements come together visually that make something. And what I was doing was I was thinking about things more slowly and I was noticing things, and then I might recreate something for the camera. So it was, I guess what I was doing, I was slowing down the process of looking and thinking rather than having to look and think on my feet and be kind of fast moving and out in the world.
I guess these ideas of home and the domestic realm, they've always felt like a very important setting in your work. It's interesting to hear that kind of like origin story of that gravitation towards that subject matter. Is there something that's kind of kept you grounded in that exploration throughout your practice?
Convenience. maybe I'm just lazy. Maybe I just don't like to get up and get out of the house. I mean, I do, you know, I do go outside. I do go out into the world. Although, and I know Yvonne Todd has the same problem when she's photographing out in the world. She uses a very large camera. I use a large view camera that takes a 4-inch by 5-inch or 10 by 12 centimeter negative. So it's a big camera sitting on a tripod, and it's a man magnet. If you want to meet an old guy, go out on the street, particularly as a younger woman. Someone who's usually a man will come up and tell you it's a big camera.
Yeah.
And you go, yes, it is.
Well yes, good job.
Yeah.
Nice observation.
And then you try to get on with what you're doing and you've got a black cloth over your head and it's very hot.
Yeah.
And they just want to chat.
Yeah.
But that's all right.
And you just want to be left alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to do your work in peace.
I do. So there is that.
Yeah.
There's definitely that.
Do you feel like you need to be in a certain headspace to create?
Yes, I do. And I always need a lot of time to think about things. And I've always given myself that time. Like I might... Well, the thing with large format photographs is that you don't take... You know, like you don't take a roll of 36 exposures.
Mm.
You might give yourself two sheets of film or four sheets of film. So you very much go into a situation knowing what you want. So there's a lot of time, and this is with my still photography practice, there's a lot of time that you spend just sitting in a room looking. And I often arrange something for the camera. As I said, you know, I might notice something and then I might recreate it for the camera, or I might slightly enhance it or stage it for the camera, but it will derive from some domestic detail or something around the house. So most of my time will be spent not looking through a viewfinder, but actually arranging something in light. And I use available light just through windows, sometimes with a little bit of bounced light with a reflector. Can use a piece of A4 paper, you know, very, very low tech, very low key.
Mm.
So a lot of what I do is just observing and then setting up for the camera and then making sure everything's framed, you know, framed properly in the camera. And so that's where I spend my time.
Mm.
And then I might wait for some light, you know, the sun might go behind a cloud, I might wait for it to come back out or vice versa. But that's where I spend my time. So I do spend a lot of time looking and thinking.
Mm. I feel like that kind of quietude translates really beautifully in the work as well. Like you can kind of feel that the objects you photograph have been really sat with and carefully cared for, and the formation or the way that you photograph them, you can, I don't know, it feels really peaceful to interact with the work as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to know. Yeah. It's not hectic.
Yeah. No. I guess with that, we've been talking a lot about like the home and these ideas that surround that. But interestingly, what stood out to me in this show is your video work, Car Stories, which seems to take place outside of the home. And this is a more relatively recent work in the show, having been made in 2018. Are you able to speak to me a little bit more about this work and how you see it in conversation with the rest of the show, or your practice, and the way it slightly diverges from those previous familiar subjects?
Yeah, well, it's set in a car.
Yeah.
You're right, good spotting. I like the idea of finding a framework for a story. So I took the idea of Car Stories, and basically it's a memoir based around the car I was driving at the time, or the cars that I've had access to drive, either owning them or borrowing them from my mother, or owning them, or somebody else's car that I was close to that I was driving. For example, cars Julian owned. So it's a chronological from the time I got my driver's license to the present and the car that I still have. So there are intertitles that introduce the car, the license plate, and the period of time that I drove it. And for some reason, I can remember the license plate of every car.
Wow.
I think there was one where I was missing two digits. It's just one of those things.
That's quite amazing.
Yeah. And I'm not a numbers person, so I don't know. I don't know why that is. So that seemed to be a good place to start. You know, if I can remember all these license plates, wow, I need to use that in some way. So that's the framing device for talking about things that happened either in the car or around that time, but mostly the anecdotes around driving or learning to drive or driving or being in the car or other people who were in those cars. So it's quite a nice, as a way of writing something or as a way of corralling information, it's a nice framework.
Mm.
And I got the idea from a series called Stereo Stories, and I think that's the name of the website, but you can look it up. And various writers write about particular pieces of music that meant something specific at a specific time in their lives.
Beautiful.
It's really beautiful. And what got me into that was the author Maria Meischer, who's someone that I've known for a long time. And I don't read a lot of her writing, but I've always been really interested in it. And she's written a couple of them, and they're just the way she uses a piece of music, and it's not necessarily something she loves. It might be something that brings up a difficult memory or a reason why she's never liked a genre of music and she's wondering why, or she's revealing why.
Mm.
But just the idea that you can use that device to set up a period of time or to go back into a period of time, and we don't need to hear the music. we just need the name of the song. It's not about the music. It's not even about liking the music, but it's about what that music gave someone access to, or what thinking about that music gives someone access to. So I thought it was a great framing device, so I stole it, but I used it for cars.
Yeah, beautiful. That's so special, because I think it's really easy to develop those memories and connections with music and with being in a car trip, or, you know, with someone else in a car. I think even just like being in that small space with someone.
Yeah, it's a container.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a limited number of things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
But things are going to happen, and it's not about drama. Although funny things can happen, and, you know, the difficulty of selling cars and all the things that might happen. But it's a kind of it's a way to organise your material.
Mm.
So I think it's a great, you know, for anyone who's thinking about writing, or who's thinking about making something, you know, when you come to a project, you think, oh, but I can choose out of anything in the world, where do I start and where do I stop? You know, having that container or a framing device in some way, you know, and in the same way as my video, The Rooms in the House, creates a framing device or a container for another kind of memoir, which is my son's memories of the house that he grew up in after he left home. And again, that was a way of organising something that could be too big a subject matter to be contained, or where it tells you where to start and stop.
You spoke a little bit about it before, but I want to talk a little bit more, of course, about your photography practice. Majority of the show is these beautiful vintage silver gelatin and large digital photographs, many of which capture objects in this carefully staged and focused formation, a quiet invitation of sorts whereby the viewer is really able to consider one object's narrative or poetic resonance. Are you able to walk me through your process with this conceptually, and how this takes shape in your process practically?
I've kind of touched on that, like it'll start with me noticing something. Like, for example, there's a work called Lights, which is, it's working from the margins inwards. It's a background of brown paper, and then there's a set of Christmas lights that are wrapped around a homemade cord caddy, which is basically a piece of corrugated cardboard with notches cut into it. And that's how we packed away our Christmas lights each year. And then the following year, whenever you controversially bring out your Christmas tree, and I won't say when, but December, when you bring out the Christmas lights, you don't unwrap them before you plug them in to see if they're still working. So you take the whole caddy up to the plug and you plug them in and you go, yeah, these ones are good. You put them over in the good pile. So I was just looking at that, doing something that can then be, that's kind of, you know, you've got this bundled up set of Christmas lights sitting on the floor and they're glowing. So they're sort of festive but not yet festive. So I like that idea of that really mundane festivity of the lights. And in the image, the lights are wrapped around the cardboard and some of them are glowing and some of them aren't. So they're Christmas lights, but they're still kind of packed away. So that to me was a beautiful object. And then what I play with is making it beautiful but still mundane, so it doesn't have to be overstated. So, which is why I chose the unfolded brown paper background rather than leaving them on the floor. So it's slightly, so I start with what actually happened, and then I kind of arrange it for a photograph. So it is it's the finding the thing and then elevating it to the point where you maybe isolate it from its background, or you give it a new background, or you create a little still life with a single object, and then you just move around it and light it and reflect it, and, you know, you just make it look its best. And then you just take a very slow photograph.
Another thing I really noticed with the show is coming through in a variety of forms is text. You've got Julian's faxes and the Arkin faxes, your own writing in The Rooms in the House and an Astor Hotel accompanying a photograph of a Guinness. Text and writing feel like very important elements in your practice. I'd love to hear a little bit more, I guess, about what interests you in this inclusion and connection with the viewer through text, though.
I've always been a reader. I started using text in still images in the 1990s, and that was a way of, it was a way of being thrifty, in that I was able to use ideas and make work describing ideas of artworks that I'd never make. So I've got, they're like proposals, or they're like reflections on things, and the only way I could realize them was by writing them down, because basically it's an account of something. And so I did, in, I think, 1994, I did a series called The Karaoke Tour of Sydney. And one was describing a performance series that I'd do when I had a show in Sydney at CBD. And I actually started off thinking I would really do performances. And I really thought that I'd have the performance called The Karaoke Tour of Sydney, and it would be me who can't sing, unfortunately. So that was my first problem. Doing a tour of karaoke bars in Sydney, and that would be my show at CBD. You'd have to, it would be like me on tour. There was nothing in there that was going to be good. There was nothing in there that was really going to work. And I realized that. And it's a way of, you know, you have those big bubble ideas, and they're going to be great. And then as you step through them, you realize that you're never going to do them. But what it is that it's a way of capturing that first idea that excites you, and not having to live with the disappointment of not being able to do it. So you do it, but you do it in the most mundane way, which is you write it down as a failed thing, or a thing you thought you'd do but you realised that you'd never do. And really that's the work. It's text. It's text written on cardboard and photographed. And then, you know, photographed in a way that the light picks up the cardboard that it's written on, and it picks up the pencil impressions. And so photographically it's quite satisfying, but it's a very mundane object, and it tells a kind of a dopey story. And then there was another one in that pair that were pencil on cardboard, that was map of the buskers, and it described all of the buskers around Circular Quay and how I was going to make this map. And then I started talking about the buskers. So it was a way to bring actual anecdote, or things that couldn't be rendered visually, things that had to be rendered in words. But it's not a poem, it's not a short story, it's not a book, it's not a novel, it's not an essay. It's just a piece of writing, and it's a short piece of writing. It might be 300 to 400 words or you know, fewer. So it was just a way to literally put these ideas down. And then the other way I did that was I took background image negatives, which would be sort of vaguely disturbed seawater, you know, like photographs of the sea from above. So they'd create this sort of, or the sky, photographs of, you know, big dark clouds. So they'd just create a tonal and atmospheric background to write text on. But yeah, they were just writing down these ideas. For example, there was another one called New Zealand's Funniest Art Video, where, and literally it started out, I wasn't thinking, I'm never going to make this. They all started off thinking, I'd love to make this. And that was, and again, the work just describes what I thought I'd do, and then I realised that I couldn't possibly organise all of this. And the idea was that I'd select a group of artists to come up to Waiwera Hot Pools with me. I'd have to get a minivan, obviously. I'd have to get them in their togs. And they'd all slide down this really terrible water slide that had a really bad finish. Like, you know, you always got water up your nose.
Absolutely.
And it would just be a fixed frame, and I'd just film them all coming out of the end of it and in various horrified, you know, poses.
Awesome.
But, yeah, that's never going to happen.
Please, can we make this happen? Well, there's no Waiwera, but another Hot Pools.
Exactly.
It's got to be done.
Well, someone else can now do it. I give you the idea, you know, so please somebody else do it.
Please.
Yeah. Give me a footnote credit, but just go
for it.
Do your best, yeah.
That was artist Marie Shannon speaking to me about her current solo exhibition at Trish Clark Gallery, Life Stories, as well as her broader practice. Life Stories is on view at Trish Clark until the 2nd of May.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
To live with melody and happiness.
it's expensive. One day we'll share a glass together and ride the dunes. I'm riding too. There's a definite vibe. You can't be pure.
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists.
It's paintings and that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tamaki Makaurau, as mentioned on the show, Get Ready With Me, a group show by Aria McInnes, Kiani Refa and Rita Takeuchi, is on at Room. Also on at Room is Goldie's Grove, a solo exhibition by Jude Stevens. Both are on until the 11th of April.
Also as mentioned on the show, Life Stories, a solo exhibition by Marie Shannon, is on at Trish Clark Gallery until the 2nd of May.
Garden Day by Brianna Jameson is on at Sanderson Contemporary until the 29th of March.
Te Mauri o Te Wai, a solo exhibition by Sky Lunson Story, is on at Window Gallery until the 18th of March.
Yvonne Todd's Diary of a Carrot is on at the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead until the 22nd of March.
Claudia Jowett's solo exhibition Ualevu is on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 2nd of April.
Dreaming from Afar, a group show exhibiting artists by Brunel Diaz-Prims, Gian Manic, and Tyrone Tewa is on at Gus Fisher Gallery until the 2nd of May.
And Gordon Bennett and Emily Karaka After the Undercurrents is on at Artspace Aotearoa until the 11th of April. If you have something you want on the Art Guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi kia koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for us for various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us today.
Marie Shannon.
And Aria McInnes and Rita Takeuchi.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi kia koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com or check out our Instagram at 95bfm various artists for more.
Ka hoki mai Mato Aotearoa Wiki. Next up is The Land of the Good Groove with Mari. My name is Sophia.
And I'm Maya.
And that was Various Artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95BFM. Keep it on the B.
Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.